This podcast is brought to you by the Legarten Institute. I'm Sianne Hansen, Executive Director, and we hope you enjoy this conversation.
So, Alina, thanks very much for joining us. I wanted to ask you about your new book about anti-corruption strategies. Why is it important that we fight corruption? I mean, one often hears the view that, well, you know, you have to pay a bribe for something, at least you get a service for it. What's the harm? I often hear that from people. Why should we worry about this?
Well, I think everybody should worry about this because we live in a world where you cannot isolate yourself from corruption very much. Let's say there are areas or sectors which are not corrupt or countries which are relatively less corrupt. But we live in a globalized world. In one way or another, we all deal with everybody and we are all encouraged to deal with everybody. And this globalization actually brought an unprecedented extent of corruption because to build control of corruption, you need some boundaries. In fact, it is easier to build control of corruption, the stricter the boundaries are. Smaller communities find it somehow easier, or communities who have been secluded for a longer time. To create control of corruption at the scale of an entire world, it's really extraordinarily difficult. And this is why, actually, in the history of mankind, each wave of globalization was followed by quite a lot of corruption, simply because it's quite impossible to have jurisdiction everywhere. And now some instruments were created to bring about international jurisdiction. But it remains still complicated because these boundaries are roughly national boundaries. Control of corruption is about capacity of populations to impose constraints on their elites, which would otherwise use the state as the main instrument to spoil them. And it's quite difficult, however, to solve this, to fix this in other people's countries. But eventually there are countries where you want to do business, and you want to do business there, and then the rules of the games there, it's actually that you can only do business if you are connected with somebody who has, power. In one way or another, authority. If you look a little bit around the world, you would see very few countries today where you can find, capitalism as it's inscribed in Max Weber's books. What you find instead is crony capitalism. You take the list of 100 businessmen of the country, and you find that the top rich people in the respective country actually got rich because they have some privileged relation with power and authority, right? And this is something that concerns everybody because it actually prevents a global free market, and it discriminates a large mass of people who are not connected. They don't know the right people. They don't have the shortcut to power, which to convert afterwards into wealth.
Well, I think you've described the problem very eloquently, but it sounds so formidable. What can we actually do to fight the problem? What works? What do we know about the strategies that work?
Well, we started to know a little bit. So first, to put it bluntly, the crusade against corruption was launched by World Bank President James Wolfensohn over 15 years ago. And in the first 15 years, I can, roughly report that it's been 15 lost years. I mean, the only gain in these 15 years, it's really a gain in awareness. I mean, what things like Transparency International have done through the index is to show that corruption can be approximated one way or another, and you can shame governments by ranking them for corruption, which was a very good thing. However, the instruments which were tried in these 15 years were roughly wrong. We presumed that for a country to become less corrupt, everybody has to do what non-corrupt countries do. But the non-corrupt countries, first, are very few. Second, they're very developed. And third, to get where they got, they were not doing what they do today. So you have to look for a larger spectrum of evolution in order to understand how to change from corruption to control of corruption. And this is what my book does. My book looks at historical achievers, countries which succeeded long ago, looks at contemporary achievers, which are very few, around 10. Only under 10 countries made it in the last 35, 40 years, which in itself shows it's very difficult. Mm-hmm. And none of these countries is actually a success of the international anti-corruption community. They were driven by domestic reforms. There was high demand for good governance in these countries, and therefore these countries succeeded. What the international community succeeded, however, is in creating some instruments to punish people if they bribe abroad and things like this. But the way I described it, you realize that these instruments have a very limited function because actually you have to address control of corruption as a national problem in a country. It's not sufficient to punish your businessman. If you just want to stay clean, it's very clear what you have to do. Don't trade in corrupt countries. But then, this is the conservative investment strategy. Don't trade there, and then you won't be forced to to give bribes. On the other hand, however, if you do not push these countries into world trade, if you do not impose rules, then they'll ever stay like this. So it's a trade-off here. And yes, we are in for a very long fight, but we learn. And this is what my book is about. It's about learning, about discarding instruments that do not work, and testing instruments that work. Only there is not a silver bullet which works, but a context. And what I argue is how to combine factors to empower a context.
Excellent. Well, I hope we can get a lot of people to read the book.
Thank you. Thank you anyway for this great invitation.
To hear more podcasts from the Legatum Institute, please visit our iTunes channel or website at www.li.com.